Hey, everybody. Today, Paul and I are going to break down really just some in general reasons why we really enjoy being our own banker and why other people, maybe if you're exploring this concept or you're already using this concept and maybe some things you haven't thought of or some things to consider as to why you might want to build out your system to be bigger, to take over, to create more opportunities for you now and in the future. So, Paul, what did we hit on during this episode?
Yeah, I think for our listeners, they know what's going on. If you're new to the podcast or just kind of thinking about exploring the infinite banking concept and purchasing your first whole life policy, give this one a listen. We kind of, simplified things. And as Dave said, give some just really good examples of why one should become their own banker. And kind of a little bonus, something that we don't actually use in our own life, but we talked about the reverse mortgage on this podcast.
Interesting. And lastly, don't forget to sign up for the webinar we're doing on March 13th at 5 p.m. Central Time. The link is in the show notes. So get on there and sign up for that and bring your questions. We'll handle them live. All right.
Bring your Uncle Bob's.
Yeah, if you dare, if he dares.
Yeah. No.
All right. Enjoy the episode. Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right. Well, hey, Mr. Retiree, how's retired life?
Well, I would say for me, it feels the same. There was a little bit of nostalgia.
It feels the same because you weren't really working anyway. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, kind of. It's mindset, right? It's all about the way you think. I've been mentally ready to retire since probably 2018.
Yeah.
Which is the year I pinned on Lieutenant Colonel at the end of 2018. So, oh no, beginning of 2018, whatever. Yeah, end of 2018. Yeah. So anyway, I've been mentally prepared for it. And, we were talking before we hit record that I was also, a lot in part to what you introduced me to, IBC, financially prepared to separate from the military permanently as well. And it got me thinking, it is a stressful time for people. Like, I'm in a great position. My wife is still working. She's still employed. I'll have a pension coming in that I don't have to do anything for, right? It just comes in every month, starting in the second month or something after retirement.
Yeah.
So I guess, I say that to, really start thinking about your 3 to 5 year plan and start socking. The best thing I did was I started putting a crap load of cash in a position that I could access it. And I say that all the time, but I'm telling you folks, you have no idea what the future entails, and not everyone is going to be able to just fall into a government job or a contracting job or something else may not pan out. So it's nice to be prepared in a very liquid position. And, hopefully people can take away from that and really take it to heart. Like, you've got enough money in the thrift savings plan. You don't have to put any more in there.
Right. Well, right. I like that perspective because most people, when they're first starting out on this journey of infinite banking, they're thinking, well, hey, I don't know what the future holds. So what happens if I lose my job in 3, 4, 5 years? How do I make this payment? They're making that, they're thinking that, yes, instead of thinking, hey, I don't know what the future holds. If I lose my job in 3, 4, 5 years, I'm going to be really happy. I have access to all this cash value, capital that I have access to at that time to get me through that stage. It's not like you're going to be unemployed for the rest of your life. Unemployment is a stage, So it's not, people play worst case scenario, which is great. Plan for the worst, hope for the best, plan for the worst. But you're not going to be thinking, man, how do I make this payment? You're going to be thinking, thank God I've got all this cash value that can get us through this time.
Yes. And when you change careers, we've talked about that on the podcast as well. The house flipping saga and the first house that you flipped, and also a change of careers that you've done several times. It was nice to know that you could do those things and you had months, perhaps years of liquidity in case something went, horrifically wrong.
I had a cushion. I waited until I had 1 year's worth of salary at my current job. I wanted, you know, when I left corporate America back in 2017, I had 1 year's worth of salary in cash value. So I knew, worst case, I have to start digging into that. And I mean, that's 1 year of gross salary, which is really like more like, you know, probably 16 months worth of actual salary, net salary that I'm used to living on. So that right there was the impetus for me that I've got enough, I can make this leap. And it's not so risky. Everybody thinks, oh, leaving your job is risky to start your own business. It can be.
Sure.
I mitigated that significantly by having enough cash to live on so my family was not going to starve. And it wasn't going to put undue stress on us financially. Yeah. So, and that's what you've done, preparing for retirement. You know, you started, 7 years ago?
Yeah, technically I started in 2020 or 2003 when I started capitalizing several whole life policies.
True, right.
Not the right type, but still was able to build up, a lot of cash value that I
did. But you weren't even thinking about the cash value aspect.
Wasn't even thinking about it. Nope.
Yeah.
It was pure death benefit play.
Right.
But really, yes, the end of 2018 when I read the case for IBC and then quickly followed by Nelson's book and Paul Horsley's book and every book about IBC that I could find. So really end of 2018 is that mindset shift. And then in 2020, about a year into the first set of policies, I shut my TSP contributions off, as did Tim. When I say I mean we both did.
Yeah.
And then reallocated those contributions towards life insurance premiums on another policy on me. And that policy's phenomenal now, folks, right? I opened it in 2020, so it'll be my sixth premium payment on it this year, if you count the first one.
Yep.
And that policy's fantastic.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, the original ones are even better, right? Because they're a year older. And they were a different series as well. They were still on a much older dividend scale. So they're very, very good.
Yeah. And an older, you know, mortality ratings and things like that.
Different mortality table, maybe. I'm not sure if they were. No, they were on the 2017 table, but it was different math.
Yeah. But, so, you know, in either case, things change over time. Products change, designs change for the policies, but the, you know, whole life insurance has been around for hundreds of years and it hasn't changed the function of it.
Yeah. The business of banking goes on no matter what.
Absolutely. So let's talk more about that. Just infinite banking for somebody maybe who's exploring this idea. Why would I want to do this? You know, there's the details and the specifics. You could talk policy design. You could talk premium numbers and all that. But let's just back up, zoom out, and just in general, you know, what are some great things that we've come to realize after doing this for so many years, you know, a combined 20 plus years between the two of us of doing infinite banking. You know, you started it off with just the mindset, how much your mindset has shifted from, and you notice it a lot when you're surrounded by, you know, being in something like the military, where there's a certain mindset and I'm in the guard, which there's even a different mindset where people are playing their different statuses. You know, they've got active status, they've got technician status, and they're like, you know, if I do this, then I get this kind of retirement. If I do this, I get that. And they put a lot of thought into which status they want to be on and how long and all that. When you really just kind of simplified it and said, I mean, when it comes down to it, doesn't matter what status I'm on, what kind of retirement benefits I get, because I'm taking charge right now and creating my own retirement plan outside of this complex system.
Yes. The mindset that I wanted to have and that I do have, and I was talking to my buddy who's not a client, I was talking with him last night, and we've talked about this often, is that I don't want to be reliant on the pension, on a disability check. I don't want to be reliant on that money. It's nice to get it. It's definitely makes you feel good and you earned it for sure. but I don't want to count that as part of my salary or part of the money I need to have my lifestyle or to pay my mortgage or to live or to pay tuition, whatever. I never wanted to count that money as that. I just wanted it to be like, this is going to drive premium for me. Really. It's all premium. It's all already allocated. So I'm never going to touch it, which will result in having a tremendous amount of wealth just based on the pension and that comes in. The mindset is everything. And not everyone's going to be able to be in that position. Most people aren't. But I think you mentioned the people that you work with. They're working hard at figuring out how to, control the environment that they're in, right? If they would just learn to control this other environment, this banking environment that we all find ourselves in, they'd even be better off. But they're in the right mindset of trying to better their position. Just they need to do it in finance as well.
For sure. Yep. So, then we've got some notes here. One of the other things we really love is just the policy loan feature. The hidden power of policy loans. Like I was doing every month, at the end of the month, I take a look at all the bills, my credit card bills and what I need to have available to pay the mortgage and things like that. And, I just write it out on a piece of paper. Here's how much I need. Do I have that much in checking right now? And if I don't, like yesterday, I was like, we're going to be cutting it pretty close. I don't want to take the chance of not making a payment on time, even though, I'm waiting for some incoming, checks to clear. But why don't I go ahead and just take a policy loan just to be safe and make sure I have that pad and I can make all the payments on time? Because we had some larger expenses than normal in the last month, that's showing up on the credit card bill now. And, I just requested a policy loan. I actually just checked before we hit record here and it already hit my bank account, which is, not necessarily typical, but it was less than 24 hours. I requested it yesterday afternoon. It hit this morning.
Is that the other company or the other company?
Yeah, the other company. some companies are faster than others, but it's all electronic. So it's an electronic funds transfer to my account.
Yep.
Now, I don't have any worries at all because all bills are going to get paid on time. I don't have to pay any interest on, rollover balances on my credit card or anything like that. And as soon as I get all the bills paid, guess what I'll do over the next month? Because all my bills are front loaded towards the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the next month, any cash that comes in, I'm just sending it right back towards my policy.
Right.
Repay those loans so it's there next month if and when I need it.
So again, it's really no different. What Dave is really doing is, this is the way I think about this, is that when he took a policy loan to cover the delta between what he had in somebody else's bank, right, versus what he had in his own bank, he's really just pulling money from savings, taking it from one pocket, putting it in the other, funding what he needs to fund, and then replenishing over time. Just like you would do when you take money from your savings account, you put it in your checking account, you pay the bills that you need to pay, and then you replenish your savings. It's the same thing. Dave is just doing it with dividend paying whole life insurance, while the rest of people are not.
You're doing it with your own cash.
You're doing it with your own cash.
It's much more efficient. Because if you take that money from checking and pay that credit card bill with it, from your savings account, are you earning anything on that money in your savings account anymore? No.
No.
You've stopped the compounding.
Correct.
Not so with my policy. I'm still earning on that cash value is, still working for me as if I never even took a loan.
Right. When we've seen some clients hesitant, we talked about it on this week's podcast, friends of mine, they've been hesitant. They almost use their life insurance cash value as kind of a break glass fund.
Right.
Which means they don't have enough money. They're not paying enough premium and they're not keeping enough money in their whole life insurance contracts versus I know they've got money somewhere else. Well, in that case, like locked up on the walls of a house, but, that's what it's there for, right? It's there for you to use.
It's there to finance the things of life.
That's right. They're not wrong by doing that. It's okay to use it as kind of like a last ditch. Emergency fund or something. People do that with HELOCs and other things. So it's okay, but it's, don't be afraid to tap into it when you need to. They just don't, they don't like loans, or she doesn't. And I'm like, this is different though.
it's a psychological shift. You know, it's a, it's a paradigm shift in the way you think about loans. It's not the same as a loan you might take from a bank. It's very, very different. And once you start doing it and utilizing it, you actually become very comfortable with it pretty quickly and realize, man, what was I so scared of in the first place?
Yeah. Like I just sequenced some policy loans a few weeks ago to help do some stuff. And, you know, we've talked about it. I've sold this house already. I'm going to have a nice windfall from that. I've got another windfall coming in right behind that or right in front of that. I don't really know the timing on that one yet. So it's all good. I'm going to let, I'll put extra cash as I get it against the policy loans. And then when the remainder comes in via the windfalls, I'll pay off the loans. And then the excess will go into paying. I've got a couple of premiums coming up, three of them in the next 90 days. And that money will be allocated toward those premiums, right? So it's, you know, it's all good. The policy loans are there for use. So, and they're not taxed, obviously. So it's nice.
Yep. It's very nice. You know, really in those later years, it gives you a license to spend. We've talked about that
transition.
Before. That's, I mean, it's so powerful, a license to spend down your assets while you're alive. Because most people will work until, you know, the typical American will work until they're 65, retire with $200,000 in retirement savings, which is certainly not enough to live on if you plan to live more than a couple years. You know, if they're in that situation, they're eating rice and beans, they're minimizing their life to make that money last. But if you've, you know, if you've done well, you've accumulated some assets. One of those assets that many people in that position may have is a paid off house.
Right.
Right. And we talked, I think our previous episode talked about why paying off your mortgage could be a really bad idea.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's always a bad idea. Could be.
No.
Could be a really bad idea. But it was just a way to make you open your eyes to thinking a different way. But let's say you have a paid off house in retirement. What's a strategy that could be used to spin that asset down while you're alive?
Well, there's a few ways, but we're going to talk about, and again, folks, this is not we're not plugging this or anything. This is just something interesting to think about and something to explore on your own. And I have, and there's literature out there and there's videos you can watch on it. You see the commercials for it too, which are cheesy, but a reverse mortgage. Again, do I plan on ever using one of those? I have no idea what the future entails. I have no clue, but it is a way to get money from your primary residence in the form of tax-free income.
So what is that?
What's
reverse
that?
Mortgage? Summarize that real quick.
Yeah. So it's basically you've got this $1 million house or $500,000 house. That's the value of it. And you're able to access a good chunk of that value in the form of basically taking the equity out of the house in the form of tax-free income payments to you. It works really well for people who practice IBC, I think, because regardless of what happens, this goes back to the license to spend aspects of IBC, of owning a tremendous amount of death benefit, right? Is that regardless of what happens, your beneficiaries, whether it's the surviving spouse or it's the children or grandchildren, whoever may be responsible for that home after you graduate, they're going to receive the funds where they can pay back the reverse mortgage. Right? Or they can sell the property. If that was the plan anyway, to sell the property, then grandpa and grandma got
remains.
That's right. They got to enjoy the income that they needed to pay for this medical bill or just go visit the family without pinching pennies. Right. And the asset gets sold and there's the remainder of the equity comes back, you know, goes back to the family or to the estate. So it's just another tool that we want to make just people aware of. Are we personally using them? Well, we're not old enough to, but would we? Maybe. Maybe we won't. It doesn't matter. I'm going to just keep refinancing my home and pulling the cash out as it makes sense. But maybe I won't. I don't know.
Right. You don't know what else you're going to learn between now and then that may be a better strategy for you. Because right. we certainly haven't learned everything about all the different financial strategies out there. Sure. A lot of that comes when you hit that point in life and you start exploring, like many of you have done, you hit a point in life where you started exploring, maybe there's something else I should be doing with my money. I feel like there's got to be something better I can be doing. And then you discover infinite banking and whole life insurance. But yeah, maybe that is something you'll use. But at the end of the day, other assets you may have, rental properties, even businesses you have equity in, your qualified plans, you can more freely spend that money down during those passive income years, knowing with a peace of mind and a guaranteed assurance that when I graduate, when I leave this earth, my family's going to be able to replenish all of that because I have a massive permanent death benefit that's guaranteed to last one day longer than me.
Yes, I think, you know, we talk to a lot of people who are doing very well, generally. They have good incomes, they save, and they're doing extremely well. They have really good brokerage account balances and 401k balances and IRA balances and stuff. And maybe they have some rental properties. And what I want to speak directly to these people is that, like Dave said, you know, this is actually going to enhance everything else you're already doing, right? It's going to give you the ability to enjoy that money that you have been socking away and done well in the market or not well or well enough, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to make the end better. 100%. Like guaranteed is going to make the end better. It's going to enhance what you've already done and what you will continue to do. Right? You're just entering. If you're in your 40s, 50, you know, you're entering your highest earning years, just statistically, right? Yeah. You're going to earn the most money now and through, you know, age 65 or whatever.
Yeah, your 50s. I mean, I can't tell you how many 50-year-olds, you know, people in their 50s still working, and they've hit the point in their career where they are in the top 10% comfortably of all income earners in the US. And many of them are in the top 2 or 3%. Which surprisingly doesn't take as much as you think to reach that. But there's many people in their 50s that hit that, and they didn't think they would ever hit that in their lifetime. And they're like, I am making so much money right now. I don't want to do something stupid and just blow it all. So maybe I should be putting it away. But yeah, your best income earning years are going to be in your 50s.
Yes.
As long as you've got some sort of upward trajectory in whatever you're doing in life. And you need you could consider that a windfall because you're probably not going to increase, or you shouldn't increase your lifestyle by 50% if your income goes up by 50%. So prepare for that windfall. Have somewhere to put that.
Right. Yeah. Your children don't need to drive BMWs.
No. Man, I've got a buddy, and he doesn't ever listen to this podcast.
That's who I was thinking
to his own detriment. And he's bought every one of his daughters a BMW, and at least one of them has crashed it, and he bought her a new BMW. I'm like, man, yeah, I know you love your daughters, and I'm sure they love that, but yeah, there could be better things to be doing with that money.
Oh, there for sure is. I mean, at least put the money in a policy first and then go buy the BMW. That would have been better.
Sure. Even just that one simple, you add something in between your checking account and that BMW, add properly designed whole life insurance policy, and you're going to be creating something that they're going to be really thankful for when you graduate this earth, because their BMW will be a trash heap by then, but you'll be leaving them something incredible.
Yeah, because you know she's not using top tier fuel from Shell or Mobil or Exxon or Sunoco.
She's putting cheap fuel in there.
They're putting cheap fuel in it, and all these engines now. This is a sidebar. All these engines now are direct injection, right? Your son's Audi is, mine is, and what that means is that the intake valves are going to get filthy if you're not using not only the proper octane but top tier fuels that has the right amount of detergents in it. EBT plus gas down the street that's, you know, 50 cents a gallon cheaper, it doesn't. It has the minimum government mandated detergent. So anyway, top tier fuel, that's all I use. So name brands, you know, good name brand stuff. Anyway, sorry.
All right. Well, back to infinite banking.
Back to infinite banking.
We gotta get off on a.
Hey, can you hear my little dog barking?
I can. I don't know if anybody else can.
Okay, hold on a sec, folks.
It's very
hold faint. On a second.
Don't worry.
He's
about
annoying
it.
The right. crap out of me.
I'll talk while you go shut the dog up. Now, so something else that both Paul and I have really found to be powerful is just what this does for business owners. I mean, if you're a business owner, it could be any size business, small business, large business, but as a business owner, your income fluctuates. Some months are great, some months are not. But if you don't have access to capital, your business is going to fail. No, access to capital is a necessity. Do you want to be on your, hat in hand, going to the banks or going to some private investors asking for money? Because I tell you what, if you come hat in hand to me and Paul asking for money, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg to get a loan. Because money, the cost of a commodity, the value of a commodity changes based on the environment. You take a bottle of water. If I were to offer you a bottle of water right now, Paul, maybe you pay a dollar for it.
Sure.
But if we were in the desert and you had no water with you and you were miles from the nearest source, how much would you pay for that one bottle of water?
I'd kill for it.
You'd murder me for it. Right? So the value of something changes based on the environment. Same thing with money. If you need it, it's going to cost you more.
I would share the water with you, but yeah.
Well, we'd be better off one person taking the majority of it and sending them on their way to go get help.
Get help.
As opposed to both of us sharing it, splitting it evenly. So, sometimes you got to put the mask on yourself first. Oxygen mask on yourself and, right. Then give it to the kids later. But that's what it does for business owners. It provides you that cushion. It provides you access to capital when you need it. And it provides you a place to put that capital that's kind of out of reach of, say, creditors coming after you. Maybe out of reach of, the purview of agencies looking at you and how much money do you have and all that. Yep.
Which is why it should be personally owned, in my opinion.
Personally owned is our recommendation, 99 times out of 100.
Yeah. And we have business owners that are clients, whether they're in private practice in the medical field or they own a painting business in Georgia. All kinds of business owners.
All kinds of business owners and people who want to be business owners.
Yes.
And starting this is a business. You are entering the banking business. So, like Nelson said, what did he say? Everybody should be in two businesses.
The business that you're in.
And the banking business.
Thank you.
Yep. So there you go.
That used to be our intro, wasn't it?
It was. And then we minimized the intro to for everybody's sake here.
Yeah, I like it a lot better.
Yeah. So, I think that's a pretty good overview. Kind of short to the point, but we could go on and on. But that, if you're exploring this concept, plenty of reasons why you should do it. So hopefully those kind of open your eyes to some. And if you're already practicing infinite banking, maybe some things you haven't thought of some other advantages of doing this. They're not all going to be right now. They're not all going to be after you graduate. They're going to be maybe 10, 15, 20 years in the future. You're going to have access to more opportunity than your peers because you've added this one asset to your portfolio.
Yeah. And the unseen advantage of the IBC community at large is just, you meet people that are just doing other interesting things, or they know somebody that's doing something that's super interesting. And when I say interesting, I mean not stock market correlated, basically, is really what I'm referring to. There's a lot of things out there where you can make money safely.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Or unsafely, whatever.
Yeah, you could do whatever you want. The banker can do whatever he wants.
Right.
Or she wants.
But think like a banker and you'll be okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Enjoy. And until next time, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to David and Paul at theibcguys.com.
and subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.